This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
New angle of the marijuana debates. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. As pot becomes more accepted for medicinal and recreational use, is the push for legalization ignoring major risks like psychosis? Hear both sides. Also, as March Madness approaches, a look at how Villanova lives and dies by the three-pointer, plus the new food brands that are trying to change our perception of pork rinds with new flavors and even vegan options, and the persistent problem for electric cars, the lack of emerging technology for batteries.
I mean, that's really the shortcoming of the car. I mean, it's certainly fun to pass gas stations, but the issue is it takes on a typical level 2 charger, which is the kind you put in your garage, and then that's most common out there. It can take upwards of 11 hours to charge a modern electric car like my I-Pace or a Tesla.
Tech analyst Rob Enderle on wireless charging and autonomous vehicles. He's here later in the hour. Well, in less than 25 years, marijuana has gone from illegal everywhere in the U.S. to legal for at least some uses in all but 4 states. Advocates say the drug can help patients who are suffering from chronic pain, multiple sclerosis-triggered muscle spasms, and the grueling side effects of chemotherapy. Some states are exploring whether cannabis could help wean people from addiction to opioids. But as cultural acceptance of cannabis grows, opponents are warning of potential downsides. These critics point to stories and studies that link the drug to suicide, schizophrenia, and car crashes. Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today, says while some argue marijuana might be safer than alcohol or tobacco, that doesn't make marijuana actually safe. Jane, explain.
There are some major potential risks, some would say existing risks, and it was at least gave us enough pause that we wanted to look at these, you know, at least raise the question that there may be a rush to legalize it in so many states. There's a lot that isn't known yet, and as somebody who covered auto safety for 25 years, the fact that car crashes are up, insurance company reportable car crashes are up 6% in states that legalized it recreationally, is pretty significant data. The Highway Law State Institute that did the study, as we used to talk about when back when I covered auto safety, you know, they really don't have a dog in the fight. They're just trying to save money. Like, it's not like they're gonna. You can pretty much trust their data. So that was alarming. It's very controversial, but the new book out by Alex Berenson, the former New York Times reporter, about the potential link to psychosis and schizophrenia is pretty alarming. And I did talk to parents who experienced that with their children and say that they believe marijuana was the cause.
Yet there are others who say that at least the THC, right, can help with things like seizures. And some wish they had access to it sooner or knew sooner.
Right. And my colleague in Indianapolis who contributed that part to the story, she did have some, she also had a doc. There was the family that thinks their daughter would be alive today. She had epilepsy if marijuana was legal for her to have used. But then there's also a doctor saying there's just too much that isn't known, and that is probably an overstatement. So it's very interesting, and people of a certain age who may or may not have tried marijuana in the 80s or 90s were smoking a very different type of marijuana. It had in the single digits the level of THC, and now we're talking about 25% THC and very little oversight. So you don't really know what you're getting.
Is the
that of course is
Yeah.
That's an argument for regulation to some people.
Right. Is the potency, though, the issue here? Is that why there's no general rule about marijuana? Like, it will help with this, it does not help with that?
That's also debatable. One problem is, some people say, is that the marijuana that they're using to do studies is the old marijuana. And so maybe that's what you're saying. And because of that, maybe they're not finding the effects that they would find. But the fact that they are seeing a correlation, if not causation, of psychosis and possibly schizophrenia, and then there's also the issue of suicides, is quite alarming to some people.
We're speaking with Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. She's got a story entitled Car Crashes, Psychosis, Suicide. Is the drive to legalize marijuana ignoring major risks? You had one person in your story, too, I thought, make an interesting point. She said laws have outpaced science.
Right. And that is kind of pretty much the reason we wanted to look at this, because things are moving so quickly and there is so much of a, oh, well, you never hear about people doing this or that happening when people are high. It's when they're drinking, and that's legal, and tobacco, and that's legal. But it isn't necessarily proven. A lot of things aren't necessarily proven, but there's enough of a correlation that often should give legislators and regulators pause. One other important thing I wanted to mention is the mother of an 18-year-old, who I pray is not smoking weed. I became very nervous about, as a parent, that the studies are so compelling on the link to lower cognition. Mm. There was a study in New Zealand with young people who started at about 13, and by the time they were 33, they had lost 8 IQ points, and you don't get those back. It's not like your liver rebuilds itself.
For comparison's sake, could you make that argument about alcohol?
I don't know about cognition, but you certainly do. And that's an important point, because I did recently learn while I was writing about alcohol deaths, which I think I might have talked about with you, the earlier you start, the greater the risk of addiction, which of course increases the risk of dying. I don't know if it certainly can lead to alcohol related dementia, but it's another warning.
Jane O'Donnell, health policy reporter at USA Today. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct, but make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system, all with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Thanks for spending time with us. Cell phone numbers have become a primary way for tech companies like Facebook to uniquely identify users and secure accounts, in some ways becoming a proxy for a national ID. This is a problem because that over-reliance on cell phone numbers, ironically, makes them a less effective and secure authentication method. More from Scott Rosenberg, technology editor at Axios. Scott, set this up.
Facebook got into a little bit of hot water, as it has tended to do these days, when users found that the phone numbers that they were giving Facebook to use for two-factor authentication, which is when you give a service your cell phone number so that they can double check after you give them a password that it's really you. And so people who were giving Facebook this phone number for that purpose were finding that they could be looked up on Facebook using that phone number. In other words, you were giving Facebook this phone number for the purpose of securing your phone, and Facebook was connecting it to your profile and letting people find you that way. So that was the headline. And I looked at that and sort of looked at it in a broader context of how our phones are becoming a proxy for our identity in the same way that Social Security numbers did, even though neither the Social Security number nor the phone was sort of entered our lives with that role.
Jeez. All right, so explain the concerns here with regards to the cell phone sort of becoming a default national ID, as you point out.
So since we now have our phone numbers essentially for life, ever since about 15 years ago when the government said that you can keep your cell phone number, you know, whenever you switch providers, you're going to keep the number. And of course, we want to do that because it's convenient. Suddenly, technology services, which are always looking for ways to identify us because the internet itself doesn't really have a built-in identity system, which is why we all now have this nightmare of a million passwords that we're trying to juggle and manage. They have latched on to the phone. Most of us carry it around all the time. It's a unique number. It's something that we can, to some extent, trust because we know that if somebody sends you a message on your phone, you're getting it. No one else is getting it. So we think, okay, it's pretty secure and it's unique. It's like an ID, except the problem is it's also a phone number. And the phone number is something that's out there. It's not something that any of us thought to secure because, in fact, it's how we help people connect with us, right? Here's my number. We hand it out on business cards.
Yeah. We're speaking with Scott Rosenberg, technology editor at Axios. He's written a piece entitled Phone Numbers Are the New Social Security Numbers. Are we getting to a point where we may just decide to change cell phone numbers to be less unique to technology companies?
I think people who are very concerned about privacy have options. I mean, you can get yourself what, you know, they call a burner phone, where you're just buying a phone that is what you use for extreme privacy needs. There are services you can use that will encrypt things more fully. You know, there are all kinds of individual steps people can take, but the fact is that most people don't do those things because they're inconvenient. So social security numbers have been around for, 75 years, 80 years, and they weren't supposed to be an ID number, and now they're a tax ID and a health ID, and they have all kinds of uses. They also enable all kinds of scams and frauds, as we know, if the wrong people get a hold of them. And I think that that's really the scenario that we're facing with cell phone numbers. I don't think it's going to change in the short run, at least.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Rosenberg, technology editor at Axios. 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Villanova basketball coach Jay Wright is one of those who has pushed the boundaries of three-point shooting in college basketball.
Booth now kicks. Bay, open three, left wing for the lead. He's got it! Cats lead 61-62, 32 to go!
Sound from the Villanova Sports Network, but this year's Wildcats are an indicator of how much more difficult it is to consistently rely on the three-point strategy in college than it is in the NBA. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
A year ago, Villanova won the men's college basketball national championship with a record-breaking number of three-pointers made. But as Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal tells us, if you live by the three, you can also die by the three. Lane, what is Coach Jay Wright's philosophy about shooting threes?
So he has a little bit of a saying that he tells his players, and it goes, shoot 'em up, sleep in the streets. And it's meant to encourage players to be aggressive and not stop shooting even when their shots aren't going in. Because when that happens, then everything about the offense just grinds to a halt. And based on how many, you know, just the law of large numbers, if you're going to shoot a lot of threes, eventually some of them are going to go in. And that's how his team got to the record-setting number of threes that they attempted last year, which was 1,158 through all their games. And this year, just in the regular season through 29 games, they're already at 905.
How does this season shape up compared to last year? How's the team doing?
Just based on overall rankings, the team is definitely nowhere near where the team was last year. Last year, the Villanova Wildcats spent most of the year in the top 10 of the NCAA rankings, but this year they've been in and out of the top 25. But that's kind of a little bit misleading because the roster is unrecognizable from last year. Last year, the team had four players that all went in the first round of the NBA draft, and this year there's three underclassmen that are getting significant minutes and starting now. So the team is just really, really young. So it's a little bit of a rebuilding year. And considering that, the team is still doing great.
Lane, does Jay Wright go out and recruit guys that are just going to be bombing away from the outside, or is he looking for some other things?
I believe that he recruits players on a little bit more of a holistic basis, but he has a philosophy of roster structuring that is built upon the assumption that players are going to be there for more than just 1 or 2 years. So he's not a coach that buys into the whole one-and-done philosophy. And unfortunately, the team this year kind of got upended because so many players ended up leaving a little bit early, and the team next year will be even younger in the sense that there'll be no juniors on the team. And that's unusual for Villanova teams. Most of the time, there are a fair amount of upperclassmen. And, you know, look at last year's national championship team. That was led by a lot of senior leadership, and Jalen Brunson is a great example of that.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins of the Wall Street Journal. Lane, what is different in a three-point offense in terms of spacing or responsibilities?
Yeah, so when players are in an offense that's primarily based upon three-point shooting, as soon as they get the ball, they're taught to look for a shot from behind the arc, whereas in other offenses, you're taught more to be more mobile and drive to the hoop right away. So that involves a change of footwork. So when you're in a mobile offense, you want to be ready to run as soon as you get the ball. But when you're in a more three-point heavy offense, you want to be planted so that way you can pull up and get a jump shot in. And in spacing, that means that the players are just going to be farther apart, more on the perimeter of the court instead of closer in the paint. And that's just new habits for players to learn, because oftentimes in high school programs, especially when, you know, you have players that are dominant and coming out of programs and going to schools like Villanova, they usually are used to driving to the hoop right away. So it's a little bit of an adjustment period to learn to stick around the edge and plant your feet when you catch the ball.
Lane, you mentioned earlier the success this year hasn't been quite as prominent as last year in terms of record. When Villanova lost this year, what were those losses like?
Some of the losses have been very close, but this year there's also been a fair amount of blowouts. So the biggest example of that was the game against Michigan early in the season. The team lost by 27 points, and everyone on the team called that just a wake-up call.
Wall Street Journal reporter Lane Higgins with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
It's no secret around here. I like things my way. My way keeps our customers happy. My way keeps us on budget. My way keeps this place running. And my way means ordering from Grainger. They've got what we need when we need it. With simplified checkout, dedicated customer reps, and knowledgeable product experts, I can order online, on the phone, or at a branch the way I like it. My way. When it comes to effortless ordering, Grainger's got your back. Call, click Grainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Coming up this half hour, wireless charging and our autonomous electric future. Also, getting into the 800 credit score club. And the apparent golden age of classy pork rinds. That story in about 20 minutes. One of the most startling aspects about the recent death of actor Luke Perry was his age. He suffered a massive stroke at the age of 52 and died just days later, earlier this past week. This is normally something we associate with older people. Insight on strokes from Dr. Gary Epler, professor at Harvard Medical School, and author of a new book called Alive with Life. Doctor, what about his situation?
Well, we need to know what type of stroke. There's three of them. One of them is an aneurysm. Now, aneurysm is like a spare tire that has a balloon and it explodes. It's an artery that kind of blows up. And that can occur very young. That's genetic. And it can occur in 20s, 30s, or 40s. Mm. The other one, though, is a clot, a blood clot that goes up into the brain. And that can happen if there's a... If somebody has atrial fibrillation, for example, which means the heart sort of doesn't beat well and forms a clot. And the third one is a hemorrhagic or just bleeding into the brain from high blood pressure.
So strokes are considered generally preventable, but not always.
Well, they are. They can be prevented because of the risk factors. And those risk factors are unfortunately very common in America right now. Risk factors of obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, High cholesterol sometimes is also associated with it.
All right, but we know these things, generally speaking, yet we don't make the adaptations. How come?
Gordon, that is the key. Why don't people make the right health choices? We need 8 hours of sleep. We need it to prevent strokes. 8 hours of sleep, you need it for the brain energy, and you also need that REM sleep. And REM sleep is what makes us human. It gives us empathy, it gives us love, and it gives us kindness. You need 8 hours for that. And exercise, you need an hour a day of continuous exercise. Mix it up. Some yoga stretches, some weights, some aerobics, treadmill, or running outside. And you have to have healthy nutrition. And why people don't do that, there's three or four reasons. Number one, conditioning. Yeah. We've been conditioned through society, through our parents, through our friends. For example, nutrition. Oh, we've been conditioned to eat, clean your plate. Well, yeah. That's causing troubles. and that's at a subconscious level. Willpower is useless. This doesn't stand a chance against subconscious. You have to use reconditioning. You have to use the subconscious mind to counter that.
We're speaking with Dr. Gary Epler. He's a professor at Harvard Medical School, also author of a new book called Alive with Life. And we're talking about strokes in the wake of the death of actor Luke Perry. You know, one of the things I thought initially when I heard this was, okay, so it seems like it's a big stroke. However, he's 52, so I thought youth is on his side. But that did not happen in this case. He didn't recover. Why not? Or why does it happen to some and not others?
That was my surprise as well. Number one, I heard that he'd had a stroke and something that he had taken to the hospital. It didn't say anything about being very serious. And apparently he was actually talking with people. And then he just deteriorated totally. And this can occur in younger people because of the swelling that's associated with the stroke. It just seems to be more rapid in younger people. The other thing, he may have had extension of the bleeding or of the clot itself, but he did deteriorate, and it happens. It's not necessarily because of a younger age. It's just the nature of some strokes.
Thanks, Gary. Dr. Gary Epler, professor at Harvard Medical School. Again, the new book is called Alive with Life. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. One of the biggest problems for people who have electric cars, of course, charging. Chargers that drop the charging time to a few minutes have been coming to market, but the cars that can use those chargers have not yet begun to ship. What this means for most owners is that we're talking anywhere from 45 minutes to several days to fully charge cars, depending on the charging system you have access to. Can this get better? Here's Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He wrote a piece about this on TechNewsWorld.com. Rob, what's up with batteries and chargers?
I mean, that's really the shortcoming of the car. I mean, it's certainly fun to pass gas stations, but the issue is it takes on a typical level 2 charger, which is the kind you put in your garage, and then that's most common out there. It can take upwards of 11 hours to charge a modern electric car like my I-Pace or a Tesla or any of the big ones coming to market. And of course, you got to remember to plug it in when it's at home. If you forget, then you leave in the morning, you don't have enough power, and you never catch up. So the opportunity here is to go to wireless so that wherever you're parked, your car just automatically charges, and you get a bill in the mail, much like you do now for power. But we had a fairly significant problem, and that problem was we had two companies with very different standards coming at the market. You had Y-Tricity, on one side, a dedicated company doing wireless charging, and then we had Qualcomm on the other, who had a lot of things, a lot of logs in the fire, and were spread pretty thin. But they were doing a lot of the work with regard to publicity and visibility, and the two companies were kind of splitting the car OEMs, and that made it almost impossible to get approvals for putting the stuff into parking garages or parking lots or even in streets. Because with two standards, no city is going to make a bet on one unless there's a clear winner. Well, what happened was is Qualcomm sold their technology to Y-Tricity, and so now we only have one. So that removed the two competing standards. Yeah. We now have one standard, one company pumping these things to market, and that should make a huge difference for those of us that want to go green and have electric cars at some future point, because I should point out that you cannot retrofit an existing electric car for wireless charging. It has to be built in at the front end, which means for a lot of us, it's going to be our next car that will have wireless charging, but at least there's a chance we'll get it now.
We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. We're talking about wireless car charging. You know, what struck me about this piece that you wrote on Tech News World was that really the lack of improvement in battery technology for what, like a century, you said?
Yeah, it really, we locked in on lead acid batteries is good enough for automobiles, and since we're powering the things off gasoline anyway, all we really need to do is charge them. We did have some pushes with regard to supercapacitors for trucks so they can get enough power during cold weather to actually start the car, but a lot of the development didn't really start until we had notebook computers and lithium ion came forward. And then, of course, we use that in our smartphones and the rest, but lithium ion has its own energy density problems, and of course that's what we use in cars as well. But it's kind of a nasty thing to build. The batteries aren't exactly environmentally safe in and of themselves. They've got to be you got to go through a fairly significant effort of dismantling them and recycling them at the end. And the and they still don't have enough energy density. And then, of course, I mentioned supercapacitors. They had the promise, because with a supercapacitor, you can charge the vehicle instantly if you've got enough power. But the thing is, the supercapacitors didn't have anywhere near the energy density the batteries did, so you need a lot of them. They're expensive, and they leaked. So they wouldn't hold power for a long period of time, so it became kind of a nightmare. Now, it looks like we are getting supercapacitors that might actually work, and we are continuing to experiment with battery technologies like lithium air, and some modifications of lithium ion, one of them using salt water, that increases their density. But batteries are the problem. But if power is every place, then the battery problem goes away, and that's what wireless charging potentially gives you, because you could put it in streets and you could charge as you drive.
Putting wireless charging on streets or highways, I couldn't even guess what that might cost. Is that one of the holdups here?
Well, yeah, it would be. I mean, one, you'd need a standard, and number two, you'd need cars that could use it. And then, of course, when you're rebuilding highways, you'd have to embed it in the highway. But that's one way if you wanted to go electric and you weren't convinced you were going to be able to solve the battery problem, that would be one way to do it.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Consumer credit scores were created to give lenders a snapshot of borrowers' payment history. That helps them decide whether to approve consumers for loans, credit cards, or other financing. Higher scores also translate into lower interest rates. But according to Wall Street Journal reporter Peter Rudiger, this measure of creditworthiness has since become a status symbol for overachievers and perfectionists. Peter, what did you find?
We found a subgroup of people who are really obsessed with getting that score as high as possible, preferably over 800 to be what they call the 800 club, for no real reason at all other than bragging rights. It's just something else that they can maximize, kind of like your Uber rating, or think of people who, you know, want to get those 10,000 steps every single day and might, you know, run around the living room in order to get over that hurdle. It's just something that now that we can measure it, we want to get it to be as high as possible.
I always thought this was something that was somewhat private, but you found kind of this one office group, right, where they have their own little competition in this subgroup.
Yeah, every month, a hand group of ladies at a pizzeria in Charleston, South Carolina, they got a credit score contest where they would email each other their credit scores every month. The highest one would win, and you got bragging rights there. There were no actual prizes, but it got pretty intense. You know, there was some trash talking involved. At one point, one of the coworkers duct taped a screenshot of their credit score to another one's refrigerator to kind of rub in the fact that she had won that month.
That's great. What do the obsessive types do? Because this group strikes me as the obsessive type. How do they maybe micro or hyper manage this?
Sure. So maybe 10 years ago, you couldn't do a lot of this kind of stuff just because your credit score was really hard to get a hold of unless you were applying for a loan. So now that there's this whole universe of apps that can tell you your credit score anytime you want to look it up, that's given rise to all these new tactics to try to monitor it and improve it. So you can log into your, you know, your mobile banking app or a website like Credit Karma or Credit Sesame, you know, multiple times a day if you want. Your score probably won't change, but you can still kind of see what it is, and sometimes they'll even give you recommendations for how to improve it. So let's say one of the things that companies look for is how much the term is utilization, like how much of your outstanding spending limits are you currently using on your credit card. So if you were to just ask for an increase in your spending limits, or if you were to apply for a new credit card and not actually carry a balance on it, that would show that you're actually using a lower percentage of the credit that's available to you. So your credit score might actually go up in the long run.
That's funny. We're speaking with Peter Rudiger, Wall Street Journal reporter, about his story entitled "Getting into the 800 Credit Score Club is Tough Enough, Staying In is Tougher." Why is it harder to stay in?
Well, you know, a lot of people have credit needs over time, right? So if you're applying for, you know, a mortgage, you might have to submit applications to a few different lenders. You know, if you're applying for an auto loan, you know, maybe you get denied at one point, maybe you get accepted eventually, but every time you apply for a new loan, that's going to take a little bit of a hit to your credit score. So unless you're a person that never needs any credit, and, you know, then it's going to be tough to stay in there for a long period of time.
How about that? Peter Rudiger, Wall Street Journal reporter. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Well, a buzzy snack is popping up in supermarkets across the country alongside kale chips and quinoa puffs: pork rinds. Even longtime fans might not recognize their new place in the foodie food chain. The Wall Street Journal says new brands are seeking to transcend the rind's reputation as a greasy gas station staple by using premium ingredients like humanely raised pork and Himalayan pink salt. If that's not enough to provoke a serious case of cognitive dissonance, the journal says there are even vegan alternatives. The term pork rinds, by the way, simply means pork skin without fat, whether raw or what you'd find in a bag, fried and puffed up. To get that airy quality, the skin is rendered of its fat and then fried twice. The packaging of Pork Clouds Cinnamon Ceylon Rinds touts their lack of preservatives. It also encourages a pairing with a craft beer. Epic Provisions, founded by an Austin, Texas couple who had trouble finding snacks to fit the paleo diet, offers pork rinds, which now come in flavors including chili lime and maple bacon. That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.